This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back and join us once again on the Highway to the Impact Zone. I am your host, Logan Croslin, and I would like to thank you for joining us for episode number 29, where we will be discussing the February 18th and February 25th episodes of Impact. Let me now bring in my co-host and the all-star breakfast of the Highway crew, Jake Williams. How you doing, Jake?
I'm good. I'm feeling like an all-star. Got my game on. Time to go play.
Hey now. And
all right. And let me bring in our experts now. First, he is piece of the action, and he is the hash brown bowl of the Highway crew. Matt Souza, how you doing, Matt?
I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not, but hello, Logan.
Great now, to be. See, it is a compliment because no matter what you put in the bowl on top of the hash browns, you always pull through and you always come in clutch. Mm-hmm. So that's what.
Those are delicious. Those,
That sounds great. That's just science. That, I mean, that's what that sounds like.
That does sound like a hard thing to mess up, a hash brown bowl.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you put cigarette butts, rat shit, any of that stuff, and you still.
I'm always caked in cigarette butts and rat shit.
nose hairs, snot, everything.
Speaking of shit, though, he is the brand muffin of the Highway crew.
Oh, John, the brand muffin,
the birch chili.
The brand muffin sounds like a healthy option, and I'm certainly not the epitome of healthy. But good evening, gentlemen. It's, as always, it's a pleasure to be here tonight.
It sounds like something a retired old person would eat. So
that's what I'm saying. It's like my freaking parents ate brand muffins and made us eat them when we were like teenagers. So yes, I am very familiar with brand muffins. Asshole.
That's just a regular with all the fiber, you know.
Yeah. Yes, you have to.
Got to get that with. Got to get that with some prune juice too, just to be sure. You know,
you got to keep the colon clean at my age, guys. Mm.
This episode is brought to you by Waffle House, by the way.
Speaking of colon cleansing,
All right, Sean, I'll stick with you. We discussed Against All Odds on our last episode. What did you think of the pay per view?
Well, I'm probably going to get a lot of grief about this pay-per-view. All right, so I don't think we need to really talk about Jeff Hammond too much. I think we beat him dead like a horse. It was awful, truly awful. And since he ghosted us, I'm just going to shit all over him. Yeah, you're awful, Jeff Hammond. I will also say, man, the Iron Man match, guys, it was good, but I think it's very overrated. If you go back and think about TNA and what you hear about TNA, you always hear about these matches. Like this Iron Man match is one of those ones that sticks out that you hear a lot about. I think it's good, don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's like the greatest Iron Man match of all time, like everyone wants to talk about and you'll actually hear about in this podcast tonight. On the flip side of that, though, I really did enjoy the Abyss-Jeff Hardy match, probably my favorite Jeff Hardy match that he's had since he's been here. And then the main event, I don't think I need to say more than the main event, except for they couldn't get more creative than New Age Outlaw for a name for the artist formerly known as Billy Gunn. So, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I got you. Now, I don't think anybody went five on the Iron Man, so nobody thought it was perfect, to say the least.
Well,
so.
No, but I'm even saying, like, even for 4-star, and by the way, I also got to give a shout-out to Lewis, because I know Lewis and I have a ongoing thing when we're not on the show together, but his interpretation of Dusty's pickup truck as the casting cab popped me big time. So Lewis, shout out to you.
Matt, what were your thoughts on Against All Odds?
Yeah, I liked the Iron Man match a little bit more than Sean. I was more in line with what you guys thought about it more than what Sean thought about it. The rest of the show I thought was relatively average. The main event probably below average with just the overbooking with the Outlaw and Waltman showing up. It was just too much. And I get you had to have smoke and mirrors because it was a 20-minute Kevin Nash match in 2005. But, like, yeah, it didn't hit with me. Cello! That's all I got.
Yeah, that's all we need. So that's good. But from there, we'll head on straight into our first episode for the night, where we open with Tanae and Wes kind of going through all the events of Against All Odds, what we saw at the pay-per-view. They then welcome us into the Impact Zone and say that there was a scuffle that happened on the Best Damn Sports Show leading into the Super Bowl that had happened that past weekend. And basically, it's just a conversation between Nash, Jarrett, and DDP. And Jarrett absolutely crushes DDP with the guitar at one point. So, and I love that the heel Jarrett is wearing the Eagles jersey and not the Pats jersey. So I thought that was hilarious. Just thinking of it now, how much of a heel the Patriots are nowadays. But Jake, what do you think of the kind of Best Damn Sports Show stuff that they showed?
Yeah, it was all right. I thought it was, you know, I get why they would want to show it. It's kind of like a big deal for them to be in any way affiliated with, I guess, the Super Bowl. It was okay. I guess it's sort of going to lead us in. I guess it's the most justification we're going to get for what's going to end up being our title match that's coming at the next pay-per-view.
Gotcha. Matt, what do you think of the Best Damn Sports Show stuff?
Yeah, the segment itself was fine, and I mean, it makes sense from TNA's perspective. You know, Best Damn Sports Show, I think, was still pretty popular at this time, so get more eyes on TNA, it makes sense from that aspect. But I mean, it was fairly basic stuff. And the other thing too, I don't know if you mentioned it, but during the opening highlight package on Impact, when they went through Against All Odds, Don West said that Jarrett versus Nash is one of the best NWA title matches of all time. I don't know if that's that. Not quite, sir. Not quite.
Yeah, that falls a little bit short there, I think. But Sean, what did you think of the Best Damn Sports Show stuff?
Match is up there with Steamboat Flair, man. That's a good match. I thought it was actually kind of cool. What I didn't understand is, so that Best Damn Sports Show, I think they put the date on there when that happened. That was on February the 4th, right? So why do we not know about this? Why didn't they tell us about this angle at the pay-per-view? Because it had happened prior to the pay-per-view.
That is a great question.
So, that's a great question.
So they didn't
I think
sell
it's
it.
Because...
Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
No, like I was saying, I think I get what you're saying. Like, why hold off on it? But I think it's because... because it fits where they're going with the title, I guess, would be my only guess as to why they do it this way.
I thought the angle was really cool and it was simple and a short way to get to where they wanted to go. But like DDP didn't even sell this during his tag team match at Against All Odds. It's like, oh, hey, you know, we had this match at Against All Odds. Oh, by the way, he got hit with a guitar on TV this past weekend. It was just odd. But as far as the angle itself, I was okay with it. It was simple. It gets them where they want to go. So no issue. Just the timeline on it and the no selling of it at the pay-per-view just seemed odd to me.
I thought Sean was going to say, I didn't get what the Super Bowl was. What is the
Super
Bowl?
Yeah, I thought this one was bringing up.
Okay, so guys, I am not that sports. I'm not that sports stupid. I understand what the Super Bowl is. I get it.
That's deaf. I almost, when you started to say that, I almost said you don't understand the Super Bowl.
No, it's just, anyway.
We just need to make sure is all. Yeah. Just covering our bases here.
But yeah, it was a good way to get them on like a quote unquote real sports show. So it got them a little bit of publicity. So I think it's probably a good spot for them. But then we'll go from there and we go to our first match, and it's going to be Michael Shane versus Ron Killings. The two kind of trade arm locks to start until Shane gets Truth into the corner and starts peppering him with some big punches and kicks. The ref then pulls him away, and he kind of starts to taunt while Truth has kind of pulled himself to the top rope, and then he hits a missile dropkick from there. Truth then gets some big strikes in, but gets dumped to the apron where Kaz actually interferes from the outside. He's out there with Shane and hits some strikes before rolling Truth back into the ring. Shane then goes for a quick pin, but only gets two. Truth then pops right back up with a couple of big strikes before Irish whipping Shane, only to eventually get belly to belly himself.
Shane then goes to the top, but Truth crotches him before he can do anything else. Truth then hits a brutal muscle buster kind of drop down neck breaker thing. I didn't really know what it was called, but that's kind of how I described it. When both men get back up to their feet, Killings hits some big punches and kicks. Kaz then gets on the apron to provide a momentary distraction, but Truth eventually pushes Shane into him, and then he hits the scissors kick and gets the win. Jake, what do you think of this opener?
Yeah, good little solid match to open up the show. Truth always looks pretty good. I was glad to see him pick up a win because I say this all the time on the show, but he's criminally underutilized. So I hope it, you know, I hope maybe this would lead to him doing more single stuff. They do kind of push during the match a lot too, the idea of him being in the X division, which hopefully I would love to see him be involved more with the X division compared to just doing nothing like he's doing now, except pal around with 3LK. So I'd love to see him do that. But I went 2 stars in the match. Had a nice fast pace. Each of these guys could go, especially Truth. The one thing that I like the neck breaker that Truth pulled that. I thought that was pretty sick, the neck breaker spot. But one thing that stood out to me too is I didn't even think it was him at first, but Kaz with that straightened hair was quite a sight to behold.
Yeah, he had a very Fabio vibe going on tonight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. but Matt, what do you think of this Killing Shane match?
Yeah, I think Kaz goes to the same barber as Tracy, but no wonder WWE would eventually tell him to cut it. But yeah, this was a perfectly fine match, fine way to open it. The muscle buster, neck breaker, whatever you want to call it, that Truth hit was nasty. Yeah, decent enough. Kaz interferes in it, of course, because that's what Kaz and Shane do in each other's matches. You have to have interference in one of their matches. Yeah, decent enough stuff. At least it wasn't Conan wrestling, which is always a positive in my eyes. So I also went 2 stars on it.
I got you. Sean, what'd you think?
All right, here we go. So I have really grown to hate Shane and Kaz's Great Value DX music. Like, it physically makes me nauseous every time it comes on. It is very bad. And of course there's Conan, there's BG, but the thing that really bugged me, listen, the match is really good. I also went 2 stars, but what really bugged me during this match is Tanay and Wes's commentating really grated on me in this match. So they started out talking about all the incredible footage they have and how TNA is hot everywhere you look. And it's really like a Great Value masturbation session for them to put over how great TNA is. And they're like this the whole time. They just yell and they scream. And like, there's just so much energy in it. It's like, gives me like anxiety. It's just, it's out of control. But anyway, the match is really good, by the way, for a standard TV match. Killings is really good in it. Matt said, you get the typical Kaz and Shane stuff that they do. I think Killings has some really good punches. He did a nice belly-to-belly in the match. The muscle buster was really great. And he also did a nice axe kick. So I also went 2 stars. I think it was a little above average, your standard squash match. And I thought it was pretty good. But, man, the commentating on this episode just is – it's a theme for me all night. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I went 2 stars on it as well. I thought it was a solid opener. Shane actually showed some pretty good stuff. He hasn't been very impressive lately, so it was nice to see him get kind of back in the swing of things. And then Truth is always impressive and always looks good. So I thought it was a pretty solid way to open the show. But from there, we go to a promo package, and it kind of talks about the history of the Ultimate X match, as we'll have an Ultimate X match at our next pay-per-view Destination X. So they just kind of go through the whole history of the match and what kind of risk people have to take to be in a match like that. So something to look forward to at our next pay-per-view. Then Shane Douglas is in the back, and he's with Christopher Daniels. He asks Daniels how it feels to come up just short of being the X Division champion. Daniel says he feels ridiculous because the only thing phenomenal about AJ is his luck. He doesn't know why he has to earn his spot in the X Division Ultimate X match at Destination X, but if he has to, he will, because he's the best and no one can stop him from achieving what is ultimately his goal, which is to be the X Division champion. From there, we go to our next match, and it's Buck Quartermain and Lex Lovett versus the Naturals. I know Sean is really looking forward to talking about this one, so I'll try and run through it really quick. Candido actually leads the Naturals to the ring, so apparently he's kind of their manager, kind of, you know, trying to lead them in the right direction, kind of get their head straight and kind of get them back on their winning ways. But Chase Stevens and Lovett start the match out where they trade some holds and reversals until Stevens nails him with a clothesline. He then tags in Douglas, and they put the boots to Lex in the corner. Douglas then hits a big Harley Race knee, kind of the one that Triple H does all the time, the big jumping knee that he does fairly often. He tags Stevens back in, and they do that awful double team bulldog into the knee that they always do. It's one of the worst double team moves I've ever seen. And it's awful every time they do it. The Naturals continue to kind of wear down and double team Lovett. Douglas then whips Lex into the ropes, and Lex actually evades a clothesline and hits a blockbuster type neck breaker, which I thought was a pretty cool move for kind of a jobber to do. Quartermain then gets the tag and immediately comes in and gets poked in the eye. So I feel like anytime the Naturals wrestle, if their opponent gets the tag, they immediately come in and automatically cheat, and then they tag in and out. But then he proceeds to whip Douglas so hard that he kind of stumbles through the ropes to the outside. So it's kind of a botch there by Douglas. But all four guys are then in the ring where the jobbers hit a few big moves before Candido distracts Quartermain, leaving Lovett to get hit with the Natural Disaster, and the Naturals actually get the win there. And then after the match, they actually hit the Natural Disaster on Quartermain as well. And then it kind of goes commercial after that. But, Sean, what'd you think of this Naturals match?
All right, before I get to that shitty match, something I want to say about going back to the announcing tonight. So I forgot to mention in the Shane versus Killings match, one of the things they were doing during that match is they were trying to explain what the X Division Ultimate X match was going to be. And so it was very convoluted and confusing. So they're going to be a tag team match with four participants. One's going to get pinned. Then it'll be a triple threat match. Then it'll go down to two once the third one's eliminated. So they're going to have three stages of, like, they explained it, and it was the most convoluted thing, and they went so fast at it, I really didn't understand it. And then the other thing that annoys me, even in Shane's promo, and Shane says the Iron Man was the best match he's seen in the last 23 years, which, again, bullshit. But then I get really tired. I am so tired of hearing Dusty called the DOA. They don't even call him Dusty Rhodes. They say DOA like 100 times a night. So just more announcing things that have gotten on my nerves. As far as the match, so I guess they decided that adding Candido would make these assholes look better. And I really, really am sad that I gave them a really good rating on the last time I was on here that I got a lot of flack for. So don't worry, guys. We're going to go right back to my normal hate here. They are really worthless in these kind of like squash matches because they are glorified jobbers in themselves. All they do is punch and kick repeatedly. I love the blockbuster, but the things about these squash matches is they always have these jobbers do these big flashy moves, and they sometimes do flashier moves than the actual stars do. So that blockbuster didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. It's just like, why do that? And then, of course, Douglas, I actually got his name right, actually did fall out of the ring, which was probably the funniest part of this entire match, because it was typical them. It's like, you know, when they're trying to throw shit in your face and they always miss the powder, it's the same thing. You fell out. Hot mess on recovery. They all look confused. This was bad. Very, very bad. I went 1/4 star. All right. Sorry. That was long.
No, you're fine. No, you needed to get it out. I understand. Matt, what do you think?
First of all, I did love the jobbers wearing just the most basic ass TNA shirts to the ring. Just a white t-shirt with the TNA logo, like I'm assuming stitched, maybe not stitched. You know, this is TNA. Maybe it was just taped to it. Just awful stuff. Apparently, Tanay said that the Naturals had Candido with them. Like you said, apparently it started on the Against All Odds pre-show. That's what, Tanay
said.
That's
what they said.
So how that happened, who could possibly know? This sure was a squash, wasn't it? And not a good one. Gentlemen, I think the bloom is officially off the Naturals' rose. I don't know about you guys, but I think whatever love we had for them is officially gone. Andy Douglas, I'm assuming it was Andy Douglas, correct? Who fell
through? It was. Yes. I actually wrote his. I got his name right, Suze. I was really proud of myself for that.
Very good. My goodness. one of the funniest things we've seen on this podcast. Just absolutely tremendous. The neck breaker that Lovett hit, the neck breaker blockbuster thing. Don West absolutely lost his mind over it. Oh, he hit a neck breaker. Oh my God. Like, Don, chill. It's okay. We're going to get through this. It's fine. Yeah, this wasn't very good. I gave it half a star solely for Andy Douglas going ass over tea kettle to the floor. So, half a star for the match, and the judges give Andy Douglas a 7.5 out of 10 for the spill. So,
Jake, what you think?
Yeah, that's interesting insight, Matt, that it was the on the pre-show. It's kind of like a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, doesn't really make a sound sort of thing. Like, if no one's watching the pre-show, did it ever really happen? Yeah, like Sean made a good point that to me, I came out of this match being more impressed with the Jamoke squad than I did the Naturals, which is really the opposite effect you want from a squash match, which is what I got from this. And like Sean said, you know, maybe not have the, but they have to have somebody do some moves because the Naturals can't do shit. So like they have to put something in this match. They got to Mr. Quartermain and Lex like do something to keep us entertained.
Mr. Quartermain.
Mr. Quartermain.
Please, Mr. Quartermain's my father.
Quartermain. He's big Quartermain.
I wonder if Scott Hall called him the Quartermain.
Say, hey, can I borrow a Quartermain? Quartermain.
Anyway, I would have a star because, and then the Candido pairing is so strange. What a contrast of physiques of that crew, because you got these two like super tall, lanky guys, and then Candido's like a cannonball of a man.
Like a big bloaty.
Yeah, like he's like 5'7" with these two tall, lanky ass dudes. It's just a strange pairing. And like, you know, I didn't happen to catch the pre-show, so I guess I didn't know about this alliance, but it's certainly a strange one. I went half a star because to me it didn't. I went below my normal one-star squash because I should not be more impressed with the jobbers than the team that's being enhanced in the enhancement match, I think, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go with half a star for the blockbuster alone. I thought that was a pretty cool move for a quote-unquote jobber to pull out. So, and yeah, Candido kind of looks like, I don't know if y'all were big SpongeBob fans back in the day, but the episode where SpongeBob gets the muscles that he blows up, they're fake. Like, his whole body looks like those things.
No, I had a really bad joke on the Naturals Candido pairing about some would say that this pairing with the Naturals would kill him one day. And I thought that was a really bad joke to make because it actually does. It really does. Yes.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah, pretty brutal. Pretty brutal. So
We're going to move on from that one.
rapidly moving forward.
We're going to move forward from that, and we're going to go back to Dusty's office, where AMW and Dustin are just absolutely going through Dusty's truck looking for something, and Tracy asks what the hell they're doing. Storm then finds a bull rope with a cowbell attached to it somewhere in the hay that's in the back of Dusty's truck. Dustin then hands Tracy a signed contract for a bull rope match at Destination X between him and Raven. Says he's already signed it, that all Raven has to do is sign it and it's official. Abyss then emerges from out of nowhere with a contract and he stuffs it down Tracy's pants and then does his big grunt, like cross arm thing that he does. So I thought that was a really, really weird segment. But did you want to be Abyss in that situation, Sean?
Yeah, I was okay with that. You know, it's kind of inappropriate, but I would probably ask permission first before just doing it. That gets you in trouble. But you know, the other thing that I've really hated that over the last few episodes that I haven't mentioned is I really don't like this AMW Dustin pairing, because I feel like AMW are kind of playing his like little sidekicks versus being a tag team great champions that we're used to. And God damn it, do we really need another do we need a bull rope match between Raven and Dustin? I mean, let's really, Jesus Christ. Anyway.
The answer is apparently yes.
Moving on.
Is this really how we're setting up matches for the pay-per-view now?
Yes, that's really like, we dig through hay for the bull rope and we shove freaking shit down girls' pants. Stupid. I mean, this is where we're at.
I love Jake, how what, I love how Dustin just assumed there was a bull rope in Dusty's truck too. Like, there's got to be a bull rope here under this hay. Let me sift through all this hay and see if it's there.
Yeah, like what sense does that make? And why are your tag team champ? Why are they there? Why are they apart? It's just, I hate every bit of it.
It's just so lazy. Like, they just want to make the matches while having to actually like set them up or have any real build. So they're just like, whatever. Like, here's Abyss. He's gonna bring this contract. Like, they just want to be able to make the matches while actually having to do anything on the show to actually make the matches really or build them up, or they just want to come up with them out of thin air, kind of.
It's like nothing has to happen in the arena or in the ring or anything. It can all just happen backstage, and they all just have these contracts all of a sudden somehow. So, yeah, it's really stupid how they kind of set a couple of matches up just right there in that one little segment right there, a real short time period. So, yeah, it's kind of weird and kind of stupid. And it's, you know, nowadays it's weird seeing him stuff the contract down her pants, because that was kind of a bit too far, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. But
he's got issues, Abyss. Okay, he's got a lot of issues.
Look, how can Tracy turn down that grunt of desire? I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing to do. Sounds like he's taking a shit. We're gonna move on from that again, and we're gonna go to our next match, and it's gonna be Mikey Batts and Romeo facing the team of Phi Delta Slam, which is Big Bruno and Big Till, and this is Trinity's tag team that she's gonna put up against Tracy's tag team at the pay-per-view to kind of try to win the Secretary of Services Dusty. But Bruno and Romeo start things out. Romeo gets a few early strikes in before he gets absolutely floored with a shoulder block. Batts then gets kind of a sneak tag, but immediately gets back suplexed. Bruno tags in Till. Batts then tries to get him with some strikes, but the power of Phi Delta Slam is just too much for Batts. After getting worn down, Batts is able to actually score with an enziguri and tag in Romeo, who comes in with a quick flurry of strikes, but ultimately gets chucked around, just kind of tossed around the ring by both guys. Bruno then hits a sit-out powerbomb, and then Till goes to the top and hits what they called the tsunami splash for the win. So Phi Delta Slam gets a win in their debut here. Jake, what do you think of Phi Delta Slam here?
they kind of strike me as like a great value 3-minute warning, and maybe it's because I have 3-minute warning in my head from watching the 2002 stuff, but I thought they looked okay. I wasn't super impressed with them, but also, like, when they showed up, I'm not gonna lie, I thought they might like really suck, and they didn't like suck. They weren't particularly impressive, but I thought the tsunami splash was pretty good. But it also, they kind of have that Mabel vibe where you're not sure if they're just gonna like crush somebody's like face or something, you know.
That's why they're great.
Yeah, like, I just feel like they're gonna be sloppy and like, you know, smash somebody's orbital bone or some shit like that. But they were fun. Where they were, to me, it was kind of weird. Like Sean was saying, how much Wes and Tanae like go insane over everything. I felt they were oddly subdued on a new team like this that they're trying to push a little bit. Like, I feel like they talked about them a little bit, but, you know, by their standards, they kind of no-sold them a little bit to me. Like, they didn't kind of talk about their gimmick or anything. Like, it's just weird you have these two giant guys that at first they look like they were in, like, muumuus or something. I didn't know what they were wearing. Like, you know, like a robe, like a scholarly robe or something. But they kind of no-sold them. I thought they would be, like, losing their minds. Like, look at these two behemoths or something. But they kind of, I don't know. They were, of all the time they should be, like, you know, trying to introduce this new team to get them over, they're kind of not totally focused on them enough, I find. But I want to start. I thought they looked impressive enough in this debut. And we'll see how it goes with the old PDS.
The PDS. Yeah, I was saying, I do think West was kind of subdued for the most of the match until he hit the tsunami splash and he lost his fucking mind. But Matt, what did you think of this one?
So, Phi Delta Slam looks like, to me, looks like a great value Public Enemy. So
God that's damn it, man.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I call them great value Public Enemy mixed with Nasty Boys.
I put great value obese Public Enemy and Nasty Boys.
Which is funny because neither one of those teams are particularly thin, I'll say.
So that's why I said OB. Maybe I should say more obese. Amazing.
So that, and then I went with a very specific great value for our bleach blonde haired Phi Delta Slam guy whose name is Bruno, correct? So Bruno is the love child of the lead singer of Smash Mouth and the lead singer of Everclear. So that makes our friend here, the bleach blonde haired Phi Delta Slam guy, great value 90s pop rock lead singer. So this was a Phi Delta squash. I love the finish. I anytime you get a fat dude doing a splash off a top rope, I'm gonna pop for it, and that's what this was. So I went a star basically for that move, and the power bomb before it looked really good too. I really like that. But yeah, just a basic squash from a great value obese public enemy.
What's the Greek symbol for Phi Delta squash? Is the squash just a picture of a squash?
Yeah.
Okay. Sean, what'd you think?
Okay, two things to start. It's great value, morbidly obese public enemy. Okay. Oh,
my mistake.
And Trinity, I will no longer refer to Trinity as her real name. She will from now on be called Stinky. So it is Phi Delta Slam with Stinky. All right, so we have, like everything they said, the anytime you get big, huge, like just fat guys destroying cruiserweights, I'm all in on that. And that's one of the things, like, I like three minute warning quite a bit when they would just come in and do their big guy moves and look like they're going to kill people. Is it safe? No. Is it a great match? Not necessarily, but man, was I entertained by these two big guys. I don't like the gimmick. I think the gimmick's silly, but I was entertained. I went one star. I don't think they're long for TNA, but I was all right with it. I went one star. It was pretty damn funny, these two guys.
Yeah, I thought they were a pretty good powerhouse duo for what they showed in this match. And the kind of sit-out powerbomb into the tsunami splash was a pretty good way to finish the match and kind of crush poor Romeo that got put on the bottom of that. So, but yeah, I'll give it one star as well. Good squash, I'd say. But we move on from there and we get a Destination X ad. And then we move back out to the Impact Zone and Dusty is coming out with his ladies. He comes out with Tracy and then Trinity kind of runs in as they're emerging from the tunnel. So, but Dusty kind of talks about how the cello got involved in the main event and then talks about the main event match and how great it was and how it continued TNA's streak of hot pay-per-views that they've had. As much as that's probably not actually true. He then announces a Falls Count Anywhere match between Abyss and Hardy. And then he also says that DDP and Jarrett will be the main event world title match at our next pay-per-view. He then introduces DDP. DDP comes out. He talks about how his career was something that no one ever thought was possible, how he probably should have never been a wrestler at the age that he started. And kind of, you know, he accomplished way more than anybody ever thought he would. He says he's proven people wrong his whole career, and he will do that again when he wins the title at Destination X. Jarrett then emerges. He says DDP got one thing right, that it's time. It's time for DDP to get out of his ring and out of Planet Jarrett so he can celebrate his victory from against all odds. He says that he could leave the ring the easy way or the hard way. DDP says for Jarrett to bring it, and then this all ends with Billy Gunn slash the Outlaw coming out and kind of jumping DDP. And then Nash makes the save and kind of allows DDP to hit the diamond cutter on Jarrett to kind of ward him off. So, Sean, what'd you think of this whole segment with all the promos and stuff?
Yeah, so again, just kind of making matches on the fly, Dusty doing his Dusty thing. And when he announced that Double J versus DDP is happening, the announcers act like they'd signed Hogan Warrior at 90 and act all surprised. And I thought to myself, did they not see the beginning of the show? Like, did they naturally assume that would probably be the match they're going to do based on Jarrett in them with the guitar? So, again, more announcer stuff. Listen, the crowd loves DDP, but the only question I have for you guys, did you guys know it's time? It's time. It's time. Did you guys know it's time? Did you know this?
I hadn't heard that.
After this.
Okay, yes. So it's time. And literally the whole feud is based on it's time. And then, you know, the I did like the actual end game of this where I have never seen Kevin Nash run to the ring so fast in my life. Like, I was actually impressed with the knee work he had running to the ring, which is very good. I thought the diamond cutter was really good. So, yeah, the initial promo, not so much, but I thought it was kind of a nice segment to sell the main of the pay-per-view on the recovery, plus kind of New Age Outlaw and Nash. So it was okay. The promo was bad. I thought the rest of it was okay.
I mean, they have to pay me extra dollars to make me run. I mean, that's a signing bonus right there, man.
Yeah, Kevin, like I said, Kevin Nash, a whole new meaning to the name knee work when he runs. Knee work.
All right,
his ligaments are quivering.
You can hear him screaming as he's walking down to the ring.
All right, Matt, what'd you think of this segment?
I thought the segment overall was pretty good, actually. Just a, you know, really simple segment setting up a couple of big matches on the pay-per-view. Dusty Rhodes here looked like he was on a 36-hour bender. Like, he looked like he was just getting off of it. His shirt's untucked. His jeans are baggy as hell. He looked all disheveled. I think he had, like, a 5 o'clock shadow going on. He didn't look great. DDP wearing a Monster Garage t-shirt during this promo, which is a show I haven't thought about in a very long time. Yeah, but you know, I'm looking forward to the match, honestly. Jarrett and Paige, they always had chemistry with one another in WCW, even though obviously WCW wasn't in the best of circumstances when they were feuding. Like, they always had pretty good matches with each other, so I think there's a chance that it's a halfway decent match. Stop me if you've heard this before, but Jeff Jarrett said that it's his world. Have you guys ever heard Jeff Jarrett say that it's his world and that it's Planet Jarrett? I thought that was new ground for him. Billy Gunn looking absolutely jacked. My Lord, he was having a walk through doorways sideways during this point. Good Lord. But yeah, pretty basic segment, but I thought overall it worked, and it was a good setup for the pay-per-view main event. So, yeah, halfway decent, one of the better things on the show.
And due to copyright and trademark reasons, I'm not going to refer to him as the New Age Outlaw, so he's just the outlaw to me. Jake, what'd you think of this segment?
Cover your ass, Logan. Very good.
I want to get a cease and desist from
Monty Stop. Steer clear of that one.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I agree. I thought the later part of it was better. The Jared DDP stuff was kind of mad to me. My main issue with this, and this, I know this is going to come off weird, but it bothers me that everyone's in fucking jeans. I don't know. Like, they need to not all be in jeans.
Yeah, even Double J with a jean jacket, right?
Like, yeah. All of them. They're all in jeans. But my problem with it is that, and I feel like it kind of pushes to me, and maybe I'm just reading too much into this, but it's like, we have all these guys that I feel like, even like DDP, I love DDP, but I feel like so much of this, they're just trying to get by on these guys' notoriety that they already have established while not doing anything to really establish them in TNA or get them over. There's kind of like, oh yeah, it's DDP. You love DDP. It's like, well, I mean, it's been a while, honestly. Like, it's been a while since I've seen DDP do anything really that impressive. So, it, you know what I mean? I feel like they think that just because these guys are big stars, that that's enough. And then they all come out, they're all in their jeans, and it just makes you feel like they don't care that much. I know that's probably reading too much into it, but it's just like they're all in jeans. It makes you feel like it's like casual. Like, I don't know. It just makes you feel like none of them are taking it super seriously and they're not super into it. And I don't know. I don't know. Just have a different look. They're all in jeans. Don't all be in fucking jeans. Have different looks.
I don't know, stupid. Jake. I'm wearing jeans right now and I care greatly about this podcast.
But yeah, I think that's
fucking jeans.
I think that's part of the problem with the main event, other than the fact that Jeff Jarrett is in all of them. But none of the challengers are like super credible. They're just names. So they like want to push them as main eventers. They're not really like building any of them. They're just kind of like, oh, hey, Kevin Nash was a WWE champion. Give him a title shot. Oh, DDP was a 3-time or whatever WCW champion he was. Give him a title shot. And, you know, Jeff Hardy, oh, he's the big signing that we just got from WWE. Oh, give him a,
especially because, and then a lot of these guys are from WCW, where like a lot of big names of WCW, a company that went out of business. Like, so
yeah,
it's like you need to do something to kind of build these guys back up, as, you know, we all know their names, but I feel like you're only going to get so far if you're just trying to go off the names.
Yeah, I was saying nobody's really. I don't feel like anybody other than maybe Hardy at the very beginning, and even he kind of was given title opportunities to begin with. But I don't feel like anybody's really earned a title shot yet. It's just
I don't know what you mean. DDP had a banger of a match with Eric Watts, did he not? He did not that title match. I mean,
I mean, he didn't win the triple threat between him and Monty. So I mean,
that is true. Very true.
So I just don't feel, I mean, I guess Monty earned his, and like, he's somebody they've built and they gave a title shot to, and you know, that was a good, you know, that was a good storyline. Didn't end how it should have, but like, that's the only person I really feel like it's earned a shot, you know, per se, but not just gotten it off their name. But that's a big problem with the main event scene. And hopefully, I mean, probably won't happen anytime soon, but hopefully before too long, it'll get a little bit worked out there. But we're going to move on to our next match. It's going to be a triple threat between Shark Boy, Chris Sabin, and Chris Candido. Styles is actually out on commentary, so AJ's out there with Wes and Sine. Candido starts the match with double eye poke, so he pokes both of them in the eye. I thought that was a really funny way to start this one. He gets a few more punches in before Sabin kind of punch him back and forth and back and forth, and then they double team him till he ends up on the outside. They both kind of start to go for an outside dive, but think better of it, and then they just start going after each other, fighting each other. Sabin gets two big arm drags and a hurricane rana on Shark Boy right from there. Candido then sneaks back in and attempts to throw Sabin out of the ring. And while he goes for a cover, but Sabin actually lands on the apron and Shark Boy kicks out. So, and then Sabin jumps off the ropes and hits a big missile drop kick. But he only gets two on that because Shark Boy jumps in and saves the pin. The two then trade attempts of pins, and then Candido, before Candido hits Shark Boy with a code breaker and then a neck breaker to take Sabin down. Candido then suplexes Shark Boy. He then goes to suplex Sabin, but while he has him kind of in the delayed suplex spot, Shark Boy actually drop kicks him, and this allows Sabin to kind of land on top of him in a pinning situation, but that only gets two again. Candido then locks in a sleeper on Sabin, who is then locked into a sleeper by Shark Boy. Sabin then does kind of a double jawbreaker to get out of it. Shark Boy then goes for the 10 punches in the corner, but he gets interrupted by Sabin, who attempts to kind of do a crucifix buckle bomb, but Shark Boy is able to slip out, and he whips Candido towards Sabin, and Sabin actually dumps Candido outside of the ring. Sabin then gets an elbow up on the corner on a charge for Shark Boy. He then hits a shin breaker and locks in what they call a reverse figure four. I thought it was a really stupid looking submission, but that's what they called it. And then so Sabin kind of has his back turned, so while he has his back turned, Candido sneaks in and actually pins Shark Boy with his feet on the rope with the ref right there. So he apparently just is oblivious and stupid, but Candido actually gets the surprise win and the triple threat. So Jake, what do you think of this triple threat match?
It was okay. I continue to enjoy Candido for every reason. I don't know, I find he's fun in most of these matches. I always like Sabin, Shark Boy's in there to kind of just play his role and do his thing. It did feel like this match was like 3 minutes long. I don't know how long it really was, but it felt like it was over in like a second. Like, it felt really quick. I guess maybe they could be trying to set up a Candido-Sabin thing, which is not the worst thing in the world. I could kind of get down for that. I think they'd probably have a pretty fun match, but it was a fine enough match. I went 1.5 stars. It almost felt like they were trying to... It felt more about that finish and kind of pushing that whole angle than it really was about the match.
I got you. Matt, what did you think?
First of all, that's a former Highway to the Impact Zone MVP Shark Boy. Please.
Put some respect on that man. I'll even touch on something else better on that show. I mean, let's be real.
You put some respect on that man's name, for God's sake. Yeah, I'm kind of in a similar boat with Jake. A very, very short match. Jake's right. It did. I don't even think it hit 3 minutes. And it's kind of starting. We've seen it over the past couple episodes where, like, a match that looks like it could be good on paper, particularly in the X Division, just doesn't get enough time to really develop into anything. And I think it's a bummer because, like, I think, you know, you give these three guys, like, maybe 5 or 6 minutes. You could add something, not necessarily great, but something pretty entertaining, and at this point with what we've seen with Impact, I'll take pretty entertaining. But yeah, this was fun while it lasted, but again, just really, really short, too short to really amount to anything. So I went 1.5 stars on it too.
And we talked about Candido's muscle figure that he has going on at this point. No way he's in the X Division. Zero chance. 0%. But they're putting him in these X Division shootout matches that they keep having. But Sean, what do you think of this match?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been pretty sad. You know, crazy, tropey X Division match, three-way with, like, lightning quick, like, pacing with, like, just a potpourri of moves just being thrown all over the place. There was a spot in this match that was so incredibly dumb. There was a double sleeper spot. And on that sleeper, Shark Boy actually put the sleeper on Candido's forehead. He didn't even have it around his, like, shin. Like, Candido had a sleeper on Saban, and then Shark Boy did a sleeper too, but it was on top of Candido's forehead. It's just so stupid. I did like the Candido spot where being backdropped out of the ring, and I didn't actually mind a figure four. I thought that was cool, and I actually thought the way Candido went, I'm like Jake, there's something there about Candido here that I've liked so far. So I didn't mind the way he won. I actually also went 1.5 stars. And I, again, just from a Shark Boy perspective, I know I shit on Shark Boy a lot, but another match where, you know, I can just say, you know what, Shark Boy kind of did his thing and it didn't really bug me too much. So I'll give a positive in it. So.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid match. I'm actually going to go 2 stars on it because I really enjoyed the kind of quick pace of it. And I, like y'all said, I really enjoyed Candido in this match, and I've really enjoyed his whole run that he's had so far. Like y'all said, there's just something about him. There's like a magnetism to him that just, you know, he's entertaining. He does some pretty impressive spots. So, and you know, I love Shark Boy, love Chris Sabin. So I thought it was a really solid, kind of lightning quick three-way that they had to kind of prove themselves to get into the Ultimate X match that's going to happen at Destination X. So I thought it was a pretty solid contest. But from there, we move on and we get some more still, like they showed still photos of Against All Odds at the beginning of the show. They show some more here. They go back to the desk and they actually announce that Kevin Nash and the Outlaw will have a no disqualification match at Destination X. So there's another match that gets signed for that pay-per-view. So that one's going to be a barn murder, I'm sure. but then we move straight into our main event, and it's going to be Lance Hoyt versus Monty Brown. Monty really kind of frustrates Hoyt early by kind of evading some big strikes being thrown at him. Hoyt eventually is able to sneak a knee in when the ref separates them in the corner. Some big haymakers are thrown by both of the guys in the early going. Monty eventually hits a clothesline, and it knocks Hoyt out of the ring. They go to commercial in the middle, as they do in every main event, so it cuts about 3 minutes out of the main event. Hoyt then goes for a cover after they come back from commercial, but it only gets 2. He then kind of chokes him in the rope and then hits a really big clothesline. He continues to wear him down with chokes and strikes. He hits a pretty brutal side slam to cut off Monty's little comeback attempt that he had going. Monty, though, is back up and ducks a clothesline, which allows him to actually hit a back suplex. Cash then attempts to provide a distraction, but Monty dodges a clothesline by Hoyt and hits 2 of his own. He hits an impressive fallaway slam. Cash again then tries to distract, but actually gets decked. But this allows Hoyt to get a big boot in on Monty. Hoyt does a knee to the chest cover, but only gets 2. Hoyt then goes for a front-facing razor's edge type move. I didn't really know what to call it. Kind of a frontward crucifix bomb, I guess is what you would call it. But Monty actually wiggles out, and he actually hits the pounce. But before he can go for the cover, the lights go out, and Triton emerges. But only to suddenly disappear. So he emerges on the ramp, but never actually comes down to the ring and does anything. But that's how we end our episode. So, Sean, what'd you think of this main event?
So the first note I made is great. Nash versus Billy Gunn announced main event anywhere in the country in 1998. So I thought that was really good for 2005. And then I put fucking TNA can't make any first match in a feud normal. So every first match tends to be like, so now they're having a no DQ, and obviously has to make up for the shortcomings of the people in it, but they just can't get away from the goddamn gimmick matches or the stupid like stipulations or, and again, just one of those things that's starting to grain on me here in TNA. They just can't do it. So Monty, there's a couple things in this I really like. Monty kills Hoyt with a clothesline. Hoyt returns the favor. Then it's just a big stiff fest. Like I thought it was just a good stiff, like hoss match, and then there was a great reversal into the pounce that I really enjoyed, and then Triton came out while I was enjoying the match, and I wrote fuck TMA. This was just like 5 minutes of stiffing, and I would have really liked to see more of these two because I think they really worked well together, and they were just good two big men, and I was really into the match until Triton came out. But for what I got from them, I actually went 2 stars. Take the Triton shit out of it. I really enjoyed what I saw out of Hoyt and Brown, so I went 2 stars.
Yeah, I got you. Matt, what'd you think?
Oh, weird. A commercial break during the Impact main event, guys. So who would have thought that could happen? So this time, I actually took note of exactly how much time we lost during this match because it's really starting to piss me the fuck off. So when they faded to black, the timer on the time limit said 8:49. When they came back, it said 6:10. So you lost 2.5 minutes of a match with a 10-minute time limit. And once I saw that, it took me right out of the fucking match. This match didn't really grab me as much as it grabbed Sean. It was technically fine. My biggest problem is why the fuck are we putting this Triton fella with Monty Brown? Guys, remember when Monty Brown was the hottest act in the fucking company? Just about 6 weeks prior to this. Boy, how the mighty have fallen.
Just you wait, Matt.
Monty has fallen.
Just you wait.
Oh, I know what's coming. I don't want to spoil it. I know what's coming, but just wait. I thought this was a pretty rotten way to end the show, so I went 1 star on it.
Really? Even though, so you didn't like the match at all? Like, that's what you got?
I just think it was very basic, really paint by numbers. And yeah, like the fact that you lost 2.5 minutes of it to commercial just kind of took me out of it. Like losing 2.5 minutes of a 5-minute match. Like it just kind of took me out of the whole thing, to be honest.
Okay.
What do you think of the pounce he hit on Hoyt, Matt?
The pounce was great. The pounce always looks great. But the problem was the stuff before it.
I got you. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of more mad. I don't know what Hoyt was doing. Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't doing anything I would describe as stiff. I'll put it that way. He came off to me like he was one of the naturals with like 4 extra inches of height.
I didn't get that. That's weird.
Okay. See, I thought it was boring. I mean, the boot was good, but everything else he did was just like stupid, boring. Like, I don't know how to actually do any moves. Offense, kind of. Like great value diesel offense, like just putting them on the ropes and choking them and, you know, lame shit like that. Like he couldn't really do much of anything. He moves super slow because he doesn't know what to do with his time. So he just has to plod around until Monty comes back. Which it was at least interesting to see Monty against, I guess, like a bigger guy. It's kind of like he almost played the underdog weirdly in this match because I find Hoyt got a lot. They did tell us on commentary that during the whole commercial break or whatever that it was just Hoyt stalling on the outside. So I guess maybe we're blessed with not seeing him stall for 2 minutes on the outside. But I agree with Matt. It's getting old. The commercial breaks, if they wouldn't do it every single time, like maybe when you have match one time, they could be like, oh, for this one, we're not going to go away for commercial. And then you'd be like, oh, wow, that's awesome. And then they didn't have a winner either, which is weird. Like it was just, they just gave up on the match once our giant comes out, which I don't get it. Because either, unless you just want whoever the hell this is to come in and get fed to Monty, I don't really know. I don't think it's a very smart move to have him come in and feud with Monty right away. Because it just can't go well because either, you know, Monty's just got to beat this dude and then he's kind of squashed right when he debuts, or he has to beat Monty, which is stupid. Do you really want Monty to lose again? So I feel like if you're going to bring this guy in, you should try and build him up and then let him face Monty. So that whole thing is weird to me, but I would have star. I wasn't super impressed with the match.
Well, I'm going to make it a family affair because I actually kind of enjoyed it. So I'm with Sean on this one. I would give it 2 stars, but I'm going to dock it a quarter just because it didn't have a finish. So I'm going to go 1.75 quarters on it. But I thought it was a good Hoss fight. I thought they kind of beat each other pretty good. I thought the big boot was really good by Hoyt and the pounce was always awesome. But the Triton stuff that kind of ends the show, and that's where the show ends, kind of bothers me a little bit. But I would have liked to have seen a finish. But I did enjoy it like Sean did. So. You're not alone, Sean, so don't feel bad.
It makes me feel much better.
I got you. Yeah. I like to do that for my father every now and then. So
gotta stick up for your old man.
Very pretty. Old people need love too, so thank you.
But cool. Jake, I'll stick with you. What would you rank the show out of 10? And what
Yeah, this one was pretty low for me. There was really nothing in ring that was really great to me or all that entertaining. It sort of just felt like a bunch of random three-minute matches, which I know they all weren't that short, but that's just kind of the feeling I had coming out of it. And none of them really seemed to have a whole lot of purpose to them. They're just kind of thrown out there. I know they did build some stuff, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the most compelling stuff. Like the Jared DDP stuff, I didn't think was all that interesting. So I ended up going 3.5 on it.
I got you. Matt, what you think?
Yeah. When Andy Douglas busting his ass on the floor during a fall is one of the highlights of your show. Yeah, it's not going to get rated very highly. Yeah, this was, again, stop me if you heard this before, but this was another bad episode of Impact. at least parts of it were entertaining, but for the wrong reasons. But, yeah, 3 out of 10. Not good.
I got you. Sean, what'd you think?
I actually overall went 3.5. Well, you know what? I actually got to give it 4, to be honest with you, because I didn't mind the main event. I had another couple of matches that were 1.5 stars. I was entertained. And, you know, the great value Fat Public Enemy match was popped me a little bit. So I'm going to go 4. I'll go 4 out of 10 on this one.
Yeah, I'll agree with Sean. I'll give it 4 out of 10. I don't think anything was just actively horrible, and I thought everything was – not everything was fairly solid, but most things are fairly solid throughout the night, maybe minus the Naturals, a little squash there. But everything else I thought was pretty okay. But, yeah, 4 is about as high as I'd be willing to go on this one. But, yeah, I mean, not a great episode of Impact for sure, but not definitely not the worst we've seen, which is not saying much, I guess. But, but yeah, I thought it was fairly solid. That'll finish it up this first show for us. So we will take a break and we will see you on the other side. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the second half of our show, where we will be discussing the February 25th episode of Impact. We opened this episode with highlights of the end of last week's episode, where Triton had debuted. We then get Tanae welcoming us into the Impact Zone, and he says DDP will go one-on-one with the Outlaw later on tonight. They then show us a confrontation between Jeff Hardy and Abyss in this, like, giant hallway filled with picnic tables. I thought it was a really weird area. I think it was supposed
Where
to be
like
outside of the
city. I said put chairs. I said chairs and tables from Home Depot they bought that day. That's what I had.
I was saying, and then Abyss throws Hardy on the only table where anybody is eating, and he interrupts the Basher Brothers lunch. I mean, poor Danny and Doug Basham were just trying to eat lunch, and he threw right on their right on their salad. So.
And the acting was so bad. Like, they're fighting behind him, and they're just sitting there eating, not even paying attention. Like, they're acting like they don't see or hear them. And all of a sudden, they turn and they go, oh, and then they jump and run away. Like, the worst acting you've ever seen. This was really, really bad. Really
and
bad.
Did you catch before Abyss came in, Hardy was just, like, staring at that metal? Like, was he like a fucking metal fabricator in his free time? What is he staring at? He's just staring at this piece of metal like, oh, yeah, this is great detail work on this. What the fuck are you doing?
So bad. This was, like, one of probably the worst openings I've ever seen on this show, ever. So bad.
I was going to say, Hardy spent the afternoon licking envelopes to send out to the TV fans. They had the addresses up. So, Jake, what'd you think of this? The Abyss and Hardy interrupting the Bachelor's lunch here.
It was ridiculous. Like we all just kind of broke in because it's so absurd. Like the people eating is just, they completely no sell it at first. They're like sitting there eating and they start, and then when Jeff throws the chair, it's like absurd. Like I don't even think he made it there. And then doesn't like Abyss like stack two tables and then they don't do anything. They just cut away. He starts stacking the tables up and they just cut away. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, absolutely absurd.
This is a tape show. This is a tape show. Like, they film this, and they're like, yep, that's good. Let's roll with this.
I wonder how much those... thrown out of his mind, so it's not going to get better.
I wonder how much those two guys got paid to sit at the one of the tables of the 100 that were in there. Like, what did they get? Like,
$0.
$0. That was about it.
Free lunch? Well, lunch?
I mean, they were in JBL's cabinet at the time, so I mean, I think they were getting paid pretty well by WWE. They just happened to be there, you know.
they got Firefest cheese sandwiches, something like that.
the Great Value Basham's eating boxed lunch at you from Universal. Wow.
Oh man. but we'll move on from that to our first match, and it's America's Most Wanted and Dustin Rhodes. I keep doing that. And they're taking on Team Canada, which is Bobby Roode, Petey Williams, and Eric Young, and Johnny Devine and Scott D'Amore at ringside. Storm and Petey start things out. They lock up, where Storm immediately gets an arm ringer. Petey then does an eye poke and nails a few forearms before whipping him against the ropes. Dustin is actually able to get a blind tag, and then he and Storm do a double drop kick on Petey. Dustin then hits two atomic drops and tags in Harris, but kind of lets Petey escape into his corner, and then he tags in Roode. Roode charges, but Harris actually gets a couple of elbows in before hitting a flying clothesline. He then punches Eric Young on the apron before delivering a big spine buster to Bobby Roode. All six men then hop in the ring, and things kind of break down for a bit. Everyone except Roode and Dustin end up on the outside, and after a few moves, Dustin actually clotheslines Roode to the outside as well. Eric Young then comes in and is almost immediately kicked back out. D'Amore then comes in with the hockey stick flag and actually ends up getting backdropped by Dustin when he misses with the stick. Tanay actually calls D'Amore at this point. He calls him Mr. Canadian Bacon to make fun of his fatness. I thought that was absolutely hilarious and absurd. But after that, Devine actually comes in and has the hockey stick flag and nails Dustin with it. Harris actually then takes it from him and kind of dispatches of Devine. Harris then takes Eric Young and Petey out with the hockey stick flag. But Bobby Roode comes out of nowhere and absolutely crushes him with a lariat, and that actually gets the win. So Team Canada actually pulls off the upset on AMW here. Jake, what'd you think of this opener?
Yeah, it wasn't too much. The match was extremely quick. It was pretty much AMW dominating, and then once they started with the hockey stick shenanigans, that's how they got the win. I only want to start it just because there wasn't a whole lot to it. I was shocked that Team Canada got the win because I assumed this was going to be a typical, like, Team Canada comes in, bumps their ass off, and loses like they typically do. So I was shocked at the result, but there just wasn't a whole lot there for me to go much higher than this. It almost seemed like another instance of maybe something that's going to lead somewhere, like more of an angle than like the angle, maybe them winning was more of the focus than doing too much in the match.
Yeah, I got you. Matt, what'd you think?
2 minutes and 40 seconds. This match went two minutes and 40 seconds. And you know, and like, I feel like on a normal episode of Impact, this would have been the main event because it's a pretty loaded match by Impact standards. But yeah, I'm in the same boat as Jake. I only went a star on it. They don't have time to do anything. There really wasn't a lot here. Like Jake said, AMW basically dominated the whole thing until Roode hit the Northern Lariat out of nowhere. But again, 2 minutes and 40 seconds, just absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, one star, not much here.
Man, Bobby Roode throws a pretty good clothesline, I have to say. So, Sean, what do you think?
You guys are being entirely too kind to this big pile of shit.
Wow.
So, a couple of things I'll agree with. I agree with Matt 100%. This group of guys, right? Sans maybe Dustin Rhodes, whatever, but he can still do a decent match when he wants to. This should have been the main event. Instead, you get it an opening match. That's 2 minutes and 40 seconds. That immediately 2 minutes in the match, DeMore's interfering. You got hockey sticks and just a bunch of stupid bullshit with this group of guys. And I said earlier tonight in the first episode that AMW is kind of playing like sidekicks. You just had your World Tag Team Champions in this match. And again, did almost nothing. And guys, there's a good chance AMW might be on my exit lane tonight, because this tag team that they've been doing with Dustin Rhodes, the last few times they've done it, the matches have been shit. This is shit. Fuck TNA. Big fat dud for me.
Oh, wow. Mm. Well, don't you get it, Sean? They're all cowboys, so they have to be together. No,
think about how great America's Most Wanted has been for us, and what they're doing to them is a freaking travesty. It's just, it's really, really starting to piss me off. They're going to be in my exit lane tonight. I'll tell you that right now. So
I got you. Yeah, this is a pretty abysmal use of them, as they've pretty much been the best thing that we've watched this whole time. So, them getting buried down in this is pretty bad. I'll go one with the rest of the guys, because I didn't think it was technically bad or anything. But like they said, there wasn't enough time to really do anything. And if it really only lasts 2 minutes and 30 seconds, then Jesus Christ, that is terrible that they only got that much time.
I am so tired of DeMore and his interference and Team Canada shenanigans. Like, they're going to probably, you know what? Everyone might be in my exit lane before I'm done with the show.
So a typical episode then.
I was just going to say, so it's a day that ends in Y for Sean. Got it.
main roster angry on this match because of what Matt said. It should have been what it wasn't. And that's why it made me so angry. He's right. So
yeah, I got you. Yeah. Were you
going to
say something, Jake?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, to go off of Sean, I think it is an issue that they have overall. It's like, I think they're so worried about the show feeling so fast-paced that it almost backfires on them sometimes. And it's like they don't let things breathe. Like, this easily could have been a match, like you guys said, that could have been a main event. You give it 10 minutes or so. Like, but they're so worried, I feel like, about making it, you know, I know it's the name, but, like, nonstop action, that they kind of don't let nothing gets any time to really develop or breathe or do anything. They just want to keep moving on to the next thing. And I think it hurts the show sometimes, like it did here.
No, yeah, I definitely get that. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't technically bad or anything, but it just didn't have enough time. And yeah, like this is a terrible use of AMW, and I kind of hope they get out of this soon. But I think they actually have like an 8-man on the pay-per-view, so it's not going to get any better between now and Destination X, at least. But we go to a Destination X ad after this match, and then we go back to Shane Douglas, and he is with Raven now. He asked him about the bull rope match. Raven then says that he's not afraid of a bull rope match because he has created many matches that are far worse. He talks about the Clockwork Orange matches that he had and the Hangman's Horror match that he had with Sanjay, like when we first started the pod. So he's had a few gimmick matches of his own that have been far worse than just a simple bull rope match in his mind. He then kind of rambles about pain, and then he mentioned something about Dustin's family not abusing him enough when he was growing up, so he didn't toughen him up enough or when he was growing up or something like that. But just an absurd, you know, Raven rambling promo as usual. Jake, what did you think of this Raven promo?
Yeah, agreed. It was kind of it did make me listen. I do kind of like when he goes off the rails like this, because it's at least something different, because I feel like a lot of what we get is generic, like Jeff Jarrett going through his normal spiel. Like, a lot of guys not saying much interesting stuff. Like, they kind of just stay generic. But I think he and Monty usually come to mind as guys who kind of throw in some weird stuff sometimes to keep you interested in this. Like he said, I am a human cancer at one point, which considering how he looked here was interesting, because he looked pretty rough physically and like his appearance. Raven was, you know, I mean, he's kind of, that's sort of his thing, is to look rough, but I thought he looked particularly, like his eyes were all like his eyes almost look closed, and he's got all that makeup on, and it's, yeah, he looked rough. But yeah, I kind of enjoy when he gets weird and dark like this.
Yeah, I just, you know, I pause and write down a lot of stuff throughout this, and that's just something I don't want to have to write. Go back and write down everything he says, because it's just so all over the place.
Cancer.
Yeah, I count on you guys to catch those little tidbits, so I appreciate you, Jake. But Matt, what did you think of Raven's promo here?
Yeah, I thought this was pretty good too. I liked when he said he created all these different matches while he's in TNA. You know, like you said, Clockwork Orange and the Hangman's Horror and all that stuff. And he says all those make a bull rope match look like a Girl Scout meeting. I thought that was a pretty good line. And you know, there's just something about him. Like he's saying absurd shit through this entire promo, but it's something about his delivery, like it makes you believe that he believes in what he's saying, and it's just there's something engaging about it. Like there's nobody else on the roster really like him that does these type of batshit insane promos, and it's kind of engaging to watch. So yeah, I thought this was pretty good stuff from him.
Gotcha. Sean, what'd you think?
I really did enjoy this promo. You know, I did enjoy him taking a drug shot at Dustin, talking about him, he needs to take his medication. Then he also runs down, he makes fun of the bull rope matches and he shits on Dusty for not spanking Dustin. Like, I'm like Jake, I like it when he does this, like, just crazy, you know, he starts, like, talking about life and death and then the human cancer. I like when Raven does this. His matches are shit, but he does get random promos that really entertain me, and this is one of them, so I thought it was good.
Yeah, his matches are shit, but they're kind of supposed to be, because that's kind of just who Raven is at this point, so.
But his promos are very good most sometimes.
Yeah, I do like that he gets kind of zany, but it's hard to follow sometimes when, you know, like I said, I'm writing down notes for so much other stuff that, like, I just, that's something I don't want to do at that point, but I'm glad that you guys pay attention to the little intricacies of everything, so I appreciate y'all. But we're going to go to our next match after this, and it's going to be Cassidy Riley versus Chris Sabin. The two actually shake hands to start the match, so we get a very Ring of Honor start to the match. They kind of trade strikes and reversals until Sabin gets a drop kick and then an outside dive. They show a replay, and it makes us almost completely miss a missile drop kick from Riley. I thought that was really stupid and poorly placed. Like Jake said, it's a tape show. You could have easily edited that way better than they did. But from there, Riley locks in, or he actually hits a lion salt, and then he kind of does that little pendulum submission. This kind of like a hanging camel clutch, I guess is what you would say, or a surfboard stretch, I mean. But Riley from there whips Sabin into the corner and attempts a back handspring elbow, but Sabin actually gets the knees up into his back. Sabin then goes through some strikes, and then he hits a Hurricane Rana, but Riley kind of tries to sell it like a drop kick, so it actually ends up kind of looking nasty, and he almost lands on his head. From there, Sabin actually hits a Tornado DDT, and then he goes for an attempted cradle shock, but it actually gets reversed. Riley then follows that with a Michinoku driver. Sabin then kicks out of the pin, and then he gets a kick to the gut of Riley, and then he hits the cradle shot for the win. Sean, what did you think of this Cassidy Riley Sabin match?
So 2 minutes and 53 seconds I timed this match at. So the Sabin dive to the outside I thought was pretty good. That was a terribly botched spot on that Karana, Frankenstein, or whatever, where Riley, instead of like doing a flip, he actually hops up. Looked really, really bad. The crowd, then if you look after that spot, there's like two guys in the crowd that the camera focuses on that are just laughing at the spot. Like they're talking to each other and they're pointing and laughing at him. So that was pretty bad. Saban swinging TDT is always good. But yeah, man, Impact, just give them, like Jake said, there's no time to breathe and everything. So when you get a botch here and there, it's more like accentuated because that's all you're going to remember because the match is only 2 fucking minutes. So I went 1.25 stars on it. It wasn't terrible, but yeah, I mean, I just can't. It's hard to get into these matches that are just so damn fast. It's impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean, or not Sean, Matt, what'd you think?
Yeah, I went 1.5 stars on it too. I thought it was pretty decent again for the, again, limited time they've had, 2 minutes, whatever. Felt to me like Sabin was kind of trying to prove something here after kind of feeling like an afterthought really since Final Resolution. Like he's hitting the DDT he hit was nasty and the cradle shock looked pretty rough. I thought he was kind of like he was putting a little extra oomph into his moves that you don't really see him do. So it felt to me like he was kind of trying to prove something like, hey, you fucks, look how good I am right now. stop fucking forgetting about me. So poor Cassidy Riley had to take the brunt of this punishment. But again, decent enough for the time they had. 1.5 stars.
Yeah, I gotcha. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, pretty much same thing. Star and a half. And Sean makes a good point. If I had to say one of the few things I remember from it is the kind of botch Rana. That's why. And probably the finish for me, the cradle shock was pretty sick. But it's just kind of a few minutes of action. I mean, they did some pretty good stuff for what they were given, but not really enough time to do much of anything.
Yeah, I got you. I went 1.5 as well. And yeah, the thing that stands out the most is absolutely the kind of botched Hurricane Rana. I think Riley thought he was going for a drop kick and just, you know, he did the best of what he could. But yeah, it was a weird spot there in the match. But yeah, like Matt said, the tornado DDT was brutal. The cradle shock is pretty snug and pretty, I feel like he put a lot more oomph into it than he usually does. But yeah, I mean, you know, a 2.5 minute match or 2 minutes and 53 seconds or whatever Sean said, it can only be so good when given that little bit of time. So, but yeah, Saban, I feel like Matt said, I think he was kind of out to prove something as he's kind of been, shunted down the card a little bit in the last few weeks and months actually. But after this match, we go to another Destination X ad. So we've gotten kind of back into the process of having a million ads, after every match. So, after this, we go to the commentary table where Monty Brown is out to join the commentary team. They ask him about Triton and his debut last week. He then welcomes everybody to Serengeti TV and says he picked the wrong Triton picked the wrong guy to confront. He says the bigger they are, the harder they get pounced. So the bigger they are, the harder they get pounced is what Monty finishes his little segment with before Buck Quartermain and Kid Cash come out. So that's our next match. To start the match, Cash kind of jumps him from behind. They then kind of trade chops back and forth before that Cash then whips him across the ring, but then gets flapjacked and crushed with a clothesline. Some more big strikes and a backdrop by Buck as he kind of wears down Cash. Cash then turns things around when he distracts the ref long enough for Hoyt to actually get a big boot in on Buck. When Hoyt throws him back in the ring, Buck gets a couple of shots in on Kid Cash's gut, but Cash then gets an eye poke in and then lays in some big chops and punches. Buck actually scores a sunset flip at one point, but only gets two, and then Cash nails a big drop kick out of nowhere. Cash then hits the moneymaker, and that actually gets him the win. And after the match is over, Triton actually appears at the top of the ramp once again to kind of point at Monty and say and kind of tell everybody that that's who he's going for. But Jake, what do you think of this Kid Cash Buck Quartermain match?
Yeah, it was kind of pretty much a squash. I thought Cash looked good, as he usually does. I thought the finish looked a little weird because it almost looked like Buck was trying to had his shoulder up maybe or something. It was a little weird. I don't know if he was just kind of trying to sell and ride the round, but he picked his arm up. It was a little weird. But the only other thing, I love Monty on commentary. I love the Serengeti television. And he called Cass and Hoyt the emu and the giraffe, which was awesome. That was probably my favorite part of this whole match, just him calling him the emu and the giraffe.
Oh, Matt, what'd you think?
Boy, we sure have seen a lot of Buck Quartermain lately, haven't we? Jesus Christ, he's all over Mr. Quartermain, excuse me. I do apologize.
He's in my express lane. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Look, with these shows, I wouldn't put it past anybody to put Buck Quartermain on the express lane. This, for some reason, was the longest match of the night so far. Explain that one to me, if you can. The logic behind that. Just a basic squash. I have really missed Kid Cash destroying fools with the moneymaker each and every week, so I was happy we got to see that again. But yeah, basic stuff, so I win a star on it.
Gotcha. Sean, what did you think?
So another common thing we're starting to see with TNA is to sell feuds that don't, like, to sell it, they put them on commentary when it doesn't make sense. Like, they did it with AJ a lot. They did it with Daniels a lot. Now they're doing it with Monty. It's like, okay, well, we need to sell these matches really quick. Let's just randomly put them on commentary and that can be part of the build. That's the thing they seem to be doing now. This is a squash. The moneymaker is a sick finish. I love it every time. The one part that was somewhat funny, the Triton comes out and Monty says, I hope this is just a light problem. And I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, oh my God. And why? And I think Matt said, why are we dumping this feud on Monty? He has been their star. They have been building him up, and now they're going to dump this fucking gimmick on him to deal with. And I hate it. And
it's so fucking stupid. It really is. Like, of all the people to pick to put Triton in his first feud with, you pick Monty fucking Brown. And like Jake said earlier, they're booking themselves into a corner. Yeah, Monty really can't afford another loss. And then you have Triton, who is brand new, who also shouldn't be losing. So
and the way it's, like I said, the selling, like I said, I hope just not a light problem. It's just, it's so dumb. That's fucking stupid. So I went a star for Cash, but yeah, the freaking Monty Triton, fuck TNA. Probably my fifth one I've said tonight.
Yeah, I was saying, I definitely want a star as well, just for the moneymaker alone. But like, I'll add a question on this match after that. Like, Sean, I'll start with you. Who would you put with Triton to start out with?
Since nobody. Don't like I wouldn't have hired this.
if you had to.
If I had to hire him? Mm-hmm. Jeff Hardy.
Okay.
Jesus.
I figured that would be your answer. Matt, who would you throw?
Well, why not former Highway to the Impact Zone MVP Shark Boy?
Oh, God.
Just have Triton fucking kill him in like 3 minutes on pay-per-view.
But couldn't he do that to Jeff Hardy and we'd all be happy?
No, that is a good point. Yes. Fuck it, Jeff Hardy.
Jake, who would you kind of throw him with to start off things, if not Monty?
If he's really supposed to be a big guy, and I guess they want to put him with a big guy too, that's why they're picking Monty. Put him with Hoyt. Let him crush him. I mean, he's not doing fuck all. Like,
yeah.
Let him beat him. It'll look impressive. Yeah,
I just know y'all said that throughout the night, so I just wanted to see what y'all's thought process was on that.
Have him squash the Naturals in a handicap match.
Jake's not a Hoyt fan, apparently. So.
But I mean, I'm just saying, like, are you planning on... I mean, I'm just under the impression that they want this dude to be a big deal. I mean, I don't know. He might... I'm inferring that he's probably going to suck based on what y'all have said. But I'm just trying to think, if I didn't know that already and they were trying to build some big guy and you want to put him in there with another big guy, I think Hoyt is not in any position where he's about to get some rocket push. He could afford to lose and he could always, you know, come back later if they want to build them on him. But he's not really doing anything.
What about Sonny Siaki? This seems like a good Sonny Siaki spot.
Yeah, I think that could be a good match. Yeah. For just a squash. I mean, if he's just going to kill him, then like,
I mean, if he beats him in like 30 seconds, fine. But
yeah.
Well, I got news for you, Sonny Siaki. We will be seeing more of, unfortunately. So
I know, and I'm not happy about it.
I was saying, with Kaz kind of being on his way out, that he could squash Kaz and Shane, because I mean, they're not worth anything at this point. Shane's probably not going to be much once Kaz leaves, when he's by himself. So he could even squash a like lower card, smaller tag team like that. So
Or him do the Sid and like run through all these jobbers. Let him I mean, we have a fucking busload of fucking jobbers.
These fucking shows.
We have 30 jobbers. Let him run through all of them over the next 6 months.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, you let Monty even do it when he was, you know, building himself up in Abyss. Like, they killed jobbers every week for a while. So, I mean, there's definitely a better way to do this. Y'all are definitely right. I just kind of want to get y'all's perspective, because y'all had said, you know, you wouldn't match him up with Monty. And I definitely agree, but, like, I just wanted to see what y'all's thought process was on where you might go with it. But, yeah, I mean, if you want to put him against a main eventer, I guess you could have kind of throw him in there with Hardy and just have him demolish him or something like that. But... but yeah, there's definitely different ways they could have gone. But from here we go to the back, and Conan and BG are kind of talking about how much they enjoyed watching Jeff Hammond perform and against all odds. So they're just absolutely bullshitting. But the Outlaw comes out of nowhere and, tells BG that he needs to talk to him alone. So it kind of plants the seeds that they may pair off, and, you know, BG might leave the rest of 3LK behind. But they needed to go talk alone. So a little bit of a seed planting there. The next match is Candido versus Skipper. So it's another one of our X Division, you know, shootout kind of matches. But to start the match, they lock up. Candido gets a quick eye poke in, as he kind of did in the three-way. Candido then follows with a couple of strikes, and then he whips him before getting nailed with a drop kick. Skipper then whips Candido, only to get it reversed, and one of the naturals tripped him up. They don't really show him on camera, so I don't know which one it was. Most of y'all probably couldn't have known, even if you did see who it was. But Candido then distracts the ref so the naturals can get a few more shots in. Candido, as always, does a great delay suplex. He holds him up there for at least 15 or 20 seconds. He then does a middle rope leg drop that I thought was a pretty cool move. He does a big running neck breaker. Skipper then gets a spinning back kick out of nowhere as Candido is kind of running off the ropes. He then nails a couple of big clotheslines and a backdrop. He then goes to the top, but gets crotched by Douglas. Douglas actually pulls him down and crotches him on the top rope. Candido then hits him with a big punch and then hits a Hurricane Rana from the top. Candido then misses a punch and actually gets crotched on the top rope. He kind of back suplexes him onto the top rope where he kind of hangs there. Skipper then does the tightrope Hurricane Rana. He kind of botches it a little bit, but he still hits it pretty well. He goes for the cover after that, but the naturals actually hop on the apron. Skipper then takes them out one at a time, and then after trading a few pin attempts, Skipper actually is able to hit the sudden death, and he gets the win with the sudden death there. But Jake, what do you think of this Candido Skipper match?
I thought it was pretty fun. It gets that low Candido bonus for me. Like I said earlier, I don't know why. I just enjoy him. He saw some fun stuff in his matches. Like here, he does the delayed vertical suplex and holds it for like 10 seconds, which was fun. It's a fun contrast again of just all these tall, lanky people against Candido is just funny to me because he just I think when he has this like stockier, I mean, he's always been kind of a stocky guy, but he's especially thick in this kind of time frame. But it kind of makes him look shorter. And so it's just funny to see him against these guys. But yeah, I thought it was okay. They hit the tightrope thing. And he's a guy who makes all of, he tries his best to make Elux look good, who is, you know, like we always say how sloppy he is sometimes. But yeah, I thought it kind of accomplished the same thing as a squash, but maybe got a little bit more time to develop. So I went 2 on it. But it was fine.
I got you. Matt, what did you think of this match?
You know, you'd think by this point in our TNA watch, I'd be used to all the constant interference in each and every one of these fucking matches. But yet it still pissed me off in this match that you had interference from the Naturals on like 3 different occasions. Like, I know you had, you know, matches earlier that didn't have interference, like the jobber squashes and whatnot. But can we please, for the love of God, just have a match between 2 people that doesn't have some form of interference in TNA? Like, I feel like that's not a big ask. Maybe it is for TNA, but for wrestling in general, I feel like that's not a big ask. And it just aggravated the hell out of me. I mean, yeah, it was technically a fine match, but like these two could probably have a decent match without that interference. Like the interference didn't really add anything to it. So I don't know. I think it dragged the whole thing down. I mean, like I said, solid enough TV match, but yeah, I only went 1.5 stars on it.
Gotcha. Sean, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm with Matt. Listen, I am so tired of the outside interference, particularly when it's the fucking Naturals. there are so many botches in this. There's a botch there's actually a botch to the leg drop that literally kills Elix. There's the Elix top rope spot that he walks and does what he does is cool when he doesn't do it every match, and that seems to be his gimmick, and now it's kind of old to me. And then there's a point where the Naturals try to interfere in the match, and they miss their cue, and the ref actually pauses a count to stop and look at him to realize that they missed their cue, and so he stops the 3 count. Did you guys not catch that?
Mm-mm, I missed it.
So anyway, a lot of botches, a lot of outside interference. Elix still, at best, is clunky. I only want 1 star in this. And Candido is still good. The stalling suplex is great. But, man, Skipper for me just can't catch a break or do anything right. I only want 1 star. And I hate the Naturals. I hate all the outside interference. It's just – and it's like, how much do you really need? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I got you. I actually went 2 on it with Jake. I thought it was fairly good. Like we've said throughout the show, I continue to be impressed with Candido. I thought a couple of his moves that he pulled out were pretty good. The delay suplex is awesome because he's just you don't think of a guy that's as short as he is, but you know he's super muscly. But it's impressive that he can hold guys up for that long. But yeah, I thought it was a fairly solid match between the two guys. But I, you know, Skipper's always have been always been on my shit list since we started this because he just always seems to just. I feel like he was kind of okay in this one. He still kind of botched the tightrope, but he wasn't as botchy in this one as I thought he had been in the past. So I thought he actually looked a little bit better in this one. But yeah, I went two on it with like Jake did. But after the match, we get another Ultimate X ad kind of talking about the history of the match and kind of what we can expect to see at Destination X. We then get an interview with DDP with Tanay. He asked DDP about his return and how he recovered from his injuries that made him retire in the first place. DDP basically talks about DDP yoga. I think he calls it something else, but that's basically the concept of what he's talking about. He talks about how it's an exercise for any man can do it. You know, it's not just for athletes and, you know, pro wrestlers and stuff like that, that can do it. Any man can do it. He then talks about wanting the title and how he and Jarrett's feud has lasted so many years and that the constant guitar shots kind of led to his neck and back injuries, which caused his original retirement. So he kind of talks about how that kind of led to him retiring in the first place. But Sean, what do you think of this DDP interview?
So first off, why is he randomly just sitting in the entrance ramp? Like they're talking, he's sitting in the entrance ramp. I guess all the chairs were destroyed during the Abyss Hardy fight at the beginning of the show, so they had nowhere to sit. But why wasn't it a real setting? Like it was a serious interview. Then DDP's talking about his DDP yoga, and he says yoga is DDP yoga meets TNA. And so the comment I made was, so it must be shitty yoga if it's meaning TNA. I do like the play on the background of Double J DDP for 2000 because they had some pretty, they had good matches. They had the Three Cages, whatever it was called back then. And, you know, I think it's cool to play on that. And they say the guitar shots cost DDP millions of dollars. So, I mean, if you're going to play off on previous things with these guys, that's kind of a safe bet to do. So I thought that was okay. But I thought the setting and where they did it and how they did it was just odd and really out of the blue.
Yeah, I got you. Matt, what did you think?
Yeah, not too much more to add. I'm in a similar boat to Sean. I like him. I like that they're bringing up the history they have in WCW and whatnot. And the only other note I had is that the shirt DDP is wearing during this interview is absolutely hideous. It's a crime. It's a crime against fashion, for God's sake. It's real bad. But yeah, the segment itself was, again, fairly basic, but you know, I like that they're actually acknowledging the history between DDP and Jarrett. So I thought that was pretty good. And fairly basic stuff, but decent enough.
Yeah, I feel like DDP's shirt here was very Jerry Lawler-esque in like the mid-2000s. Yeah. Kind of one of those Ed Hardy kind of shirts. Mm-hmm. But Jake, what'd you think of this interview?
Yeah, it's a pretty straight up baby face interview. The only thing I'll add is that I did pop for him mentioning DDP yoga this early, that it was already kind of in his head. And you could tell he's trying to, it was in his head to try and make it a thing because he's obviously trying to plug it a little bit, like getting people's heads. But anyway, the only thing I would like him to maybe start doing is to get a little more, to add some intensity, because it's kind of what I think of when I think of like peak DDP, like a WCW or whatever, is he kind of has that, like that emotion. I feel like in all most of his stuff we've seen so far in his promos, he's really laid back and, I don't know, not really soft-spoken, but he never has that like fire that he had that I think
kind of
that
makes,
that makes peak DDP, like when I think of the greatest of DDP, that's what I think of. So I'd like him to channel that a little bit here.
He needs to throw a few more scums in there. Jeff Scum, yeah. Jarrett.
Yeah, he needs some fucking fire, man. He's just sitting, like Sean says, just sitting on the ramp like, yeah, doing yoga. Jeff Jarrett's a dick. Like,
he has very Nash vibes in this one.
He just smashed your head, smashed your guitar at the Super Bowl or whatever. Like, be pissed off.
Well, I mean, yoga does make you very relaxed. Perhaps it's giving him a calmer demeanor. You know,
he not DDP yoga, bro.
He doesn't have to call people scum anymore.
Hulk Scum Hogan. That was always my favorite insult that he always used to pull out. I kind of agree with Jake. He's kind of too lackadaisical. He needs to have a little bit more fire. Yeah, maybe the yoga's mellowing him out, but he needs to quit it if it's taken away from his passion for cutting promos in these situations. So, but we'll cut to our next match, and it's going to be Chris Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Michael Shane, and they're going to take on AJ Styles, Sonny Siaki, and Ron Killings. Before the match even starts, we get another Destination X ad, so it already cuts into the beginning of the match. Styles and Daniels kind of start things out. Before they can lock up, though, Kaz jumps in and kind of decks Styles from behind. Him and Daniels then double team. Daniels then tags Shane in, who taunts and eventually gets Hurricane Ronda and body slammed by Styles. Styles then hits his big jumping knee that he does. Styles then tags in Killings. They double arm drag Shane. Killings then nails some big strikes and a power slam. Truth then goes for a superplex, but Kaz actually holds Shane in place, and Truth just kind of falls flat on his back. Shane then hits a drop kick, then sneaks a punch in on Styles. He then tags in Daniels. Daniels nails a few punches and a big kick to the back of the head. He then antagonizes the faces enough to distract the ref and get some more double teaming in. Kaz is in now and hits a big slingshot leg drop. He then tags Shane back in, who gets a few strikes in before he also antagonizes the faces. And again, a strat distracts the ref, and that leading to a backbreaker leg drop combo from Kaz and Shane. Kaz is then ends with some more strikes and a big whip into the corner and a big drop kick. Another ref distraction allows Shane to come in illegally. He locks in a front face lock. Truth somehow gets to the corner and tags Siaki, but the ref didn't see it because he was still kind of in the front face lock, so Shane kind of shielded it. This again allows the heels to get some more cheating in. They triple team Killings in the ring. Truth and Kaz then actually hit each other with a crossbody. They kind of crossbody each other, and then both men get a tag. Siaki's in for the faces, and he kind of takes it to all the heels, hitting big move after big move. Shane eventually sneaks in a forearm. Styles then comes in and kind of wards off Shane. He hits the phenomenal forearm, and then he goes for the Styles Clash, but Daniels actually hits him with a clothesline. Daniels then goes for Angel's Wings, but then Truth comes in and clotheslines Daniels. Kaz then clotheslines Truth out of the ring. Siaki then gets some big strikes and a flapjack in. He then gets distracted by Kaz long enough for Shane to actually hit the sweet and low chin music, and that actually gets the heels the win in this match. Jake, what'd you think of this tag match?
Yeah, I enjoyed this one a good bit. It had a nice pace, really fluid stuff from everybody. Even Siaki had to look pretty good in this. Like, he hit that Samoan drop that was real smooth. It was just kind of nonstop back and forth action. Like I said, it never really slowed down. Daniels is his entrance attire is interesting. He has that big like a Bruce Lee like deal. But yeah, like we had an awesome springboard. I think it's AJ. I want to see it hit the springboard. But just so many guys who have so much speed who can go you know, I know Kaz and Shane haven't presented well, but they can kind of go in a situation like this. And I definitely thought it was the best match we've seen on these shows. I thought it was really good. I went 2¾ on it, actually.
I gotcha. Matt, what do you think?
You mean to tell me when you give a TV match time to develop and you have guys in it who actually know what they're doing, you're going to get something good? My God, what a novel concept. I've never heard of such a thing. Yeah, I'm in a similar boat with Jake. I really enjoyed this quite a bit. Good, solid tag match, really nonstop. A lot of good double team work. I thought Siaki's pop-up Samoan drop was fantastic looking. The flying forearm. I like how, you know, it broke down all six guys when all six guys were in the ring. I thought all that stuff was really well done, and yeah, really fun stuff. I was kind of surprised that the heel team won. Like, I thought maybe Styles would have won this here and pinned somebody, not necessarily Daniels, but I mean, Kaz and Shane can eat a pin. They're Kaz and Shane, for Christ's sake. But yeah, same rating as Jake, 2¾ for me.
Gotcha. Sean, what did you think of this one?
Oh, man, you guys are way overrating this bullshit. No, I'm kidding. This match is really good. Really, I mean, it's a really good match for everything they said. You know, it was also cool to kind of get like an early peek at SCU double teaming AJ at the start, which is kind of cool. There was a missed axe kick that went into a Daniels Enziguri that I thought really good. There's just so many great moves in this, and just long heel heat on Killings. And like Matt said, when you give a match a long time, it's 8 minutes, which is long for TNA, but you can really get a good match. And pinning Siaki, him being there just to take the pin, all's right with the world. The right guy got pinned, and that's really why he was in this match. So, yeah, I also went 2¾ stars. I'm probably one of the better TNA actual TV show main events we've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all y'all. I'll go 2¾ as well. I thought it was a really solid tag match. Great performance by every guy in it. Kaz was especially impressive to me in this one. Shane was pretty good at like he was earlier. He was good in his match against Truth on the last episode. And like Jake said, even Siaki wasn't too bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, AJ and Daniels are great as always. So, but yeah, just a very solid way to... It would have been a nice way to end the show, but we got a little bit more to go on this one. But
So imagine if they had had that earlier six-man and then this six-man, and both of them had been really good matches. This could have been one of the better episodes of Impact we've had.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Yeah.
What do you want? Have your cake and eat it too, Sean? My goodness.
It would have been nice for them to throw a nut at a squirrel once in a while, you know? But it's TNA. Yeah. God forbid we ask for that, I guess.
After the match, we go to another Destination X ad, and then we are supposed to get a DDP and Outlaw match. But before the match, Jarrett joins commentary. And then as DDP's kind of trash talking DDP on commentary, DDP kind of makes his entrance, and then he kind of stands up on the table, and then he kind of invites DDP to come fight him. And then they kind of brawl all around the arena. The Outlaw eventually comes out and he helps Jarrett. And then Nash comes out and kind of evens the odds. And we go to black with them kind of still brawling. So that's kind of how we end our episode. But I'll stick with Sean. What did you think of this episode and what would you score it out of 10?
I'm really angry. I missed out on that DDP New Age Outlaw main event. Really upset by that. But yeah. And again, it goes back to double again. Let's put the guy on commentary and get a whole thing out of it. But anyway, just a dumb ending. So here's my exact notes. Besides the main event of this show, it can go fuck itself. And I said the opener made me so freaking main roster angry. I went 2.5 out of 10. Even with that great main event, that freaking opener pissed me off. 2.5 out of 10 for me.
Gotcha. Matt, what'd you think?
I think Sean's going to need the blood pressure pills for this one. I went four
oh, you're out of fucking four, out of your mind.
Four out of 10. I feel like it was one of the better impacts we've
one
watched.
Good match. It's one good match.
May I talk, please?
No.
Yeah, shut your mouth.
We're all entitled to our opinion.
Fine. I'll shut my mouth. I'll go on mute the rest of the show. Go ahead.
No, don't be a baby about it now. Go ahead, Matt.
No, this is quite all right if this is what he wants to do. One of the better impacts we've watched in quite a long time, considering the last like 4 or 5 episodes, I've scored like 2.5, 3, 3.5. So 4 out of 10 is an upgrade, believe it or not. Totally carried basically by the main event and by Sabin and Riley, which I thought was pretty good. And yeah, still not a great show, but a bit of an improvement compared to the absolute hot trash we've been watching for this show over the past month of TV. So I'll take a 4 out of 10 at this point.
Oh, no. All right, Jake, what'd you think?
I guess I'll heap some praise on it like Matt and I'll go to 4 out of 10. You know, I was so in love with this. Which I'll just point out is the equivalent of like a C-. So not like an amazing grade or anything. But I thought mainly just because I thought the in-ring action was a little bit better. I still don't really think the build to anything is that great ever. I feel like it's rare that we get a good build to these matches. They just seem like they want to throw these matches out there and just be like, hey, look, it's a match. You like these two guys. Like, they don't really want to build any heat to anything. Like, if you think, like, the Jeff Hardy Abyss match, what we got was them, like, I don't know, fighting in an outdoor picnic area in that very impressive fashion. But I don't know. They get better with that and just have more focus and let the show breathe a little bit and not try and just run through all these random matches so quickly. Like we said, we had multiple sub 3 minute matches on here that, and I mean, it wasn't even 3 minute matches that even really accomplished anything. They were just kind of random 3 minute matches. So they got to work on that.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I'll give it 4 out of 10 as well. You know, just, I thought both episodes tonight could have been a lot better, but neither were actively horrible. And this one actually had a little bit better of a match, but yeah, definitely 4 out of 10.
Oh, they, weird. Sean's the outlier.
They definitely need to kick it up, you know, coming up soon. Hopefully they'll get their shit together, but we'll see. They haven't yet, so I probably have no reason to think that they'll improve in the future, but we'll see how it goes, I guess. But we'll move on to our awards. Jake, who'd you have as your MVP for tonight?
I'm going to need help. I'm stumped on this one. I have no idea. I want to listen to what y'all have because I have no idea. Okay. I don't feel like anyone really, like one individual person really stood out. I don't know.
I got you. Matt, who'd you have?
I brought back an old standby, AJ by default.
Sean, who'd you have as your MVP?
I'll go with Candido.
Yeah, I went with Candido as well, just because
that's a good one. I was leading maybe Truth because he was in two of the better matches, even though he wasn't really involved in much of anything. But fuck it, Truth, why not?
Okay. You could give it to Michael. You could give it to Michael Shane. He wasn't bad in either of his matches, and he won one of them at least. So,
should we give it to Shark Boy again?
No, I think we all made comments about how much we kind of Candido's got something going on. That's why I picked Candido.
But yeah, man, if he is our MVP, they're not doing something right. You know what I mean? Like, that's not good. Like, he's just like a guy they brought in with some name value to come in and like kind of play a role. Like,
boy, watching Smoky Mountain.
Guys, listen, I know I was joking earlier with Matt, but here's the thing. Even at a four, right? A four show and Chris Candido is your MVP. I mean, there's fundamentally a problem. Regardless. No,
I know four's an upgrade.
I said 2.5, and I'm giving Matt shit just because it's my gimmick. But realistically, 4 sucks too. I mean, it's what it is.
And 4's an upgrade. That's a big fucking problem.
Yeah, it's bad. Sorry. All right, Sean, who'd you have as your LVP?
Oh my God, how? Let me count my ways.
pick one.
Can I pull a Jake and let others go first?
Yeah, I guess so. Jake, who'd you have at your MVP?
I think I will probably go with... Oh, man, this is a tough one, too, because it's like...
It really was.
It's just tough because it's hard to do anybody who looked particularly bad or, like, our MVP, because nobody really looked particularly good or bad. They were just kind of... It just kind of felt like everybody was there. Mm-hmm. You know, like, nobody really stood out in any one way, like one way or the other. I mean,
I have mine. Uh-huh. I have mine.
Go for it, Sean.
The Naturals.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Such a
shame. Yeah, they had a squash match where they were outshined by their jobber. So yeah, that's a good one. I would say.
And then he botched their spot in the Candido match too. So yeah, it's just.
That. Yeah, let's go with the Naturals.
Back where they belong.
Matt, who was your LVP?
I also went with the Naturals. Fuck them.
Amen.
All right, so the main event was great, or the 6-man tag was great in this last episode, but Andrew Thomas is the worst fucking ref in the history of refs. So he is absolutely my LVP. Mike Posey, you are great in my mind now.
I don't know, Andrew Thomas. I feel like that may be on the level of giving a Trinity LVP because she stunk.
No, he was so bad in that last match. My God.
In a different way, I should specify.
Logan's TNA hate ref is equal to my Trinity hate and Naturals hate and BG hate and Conan hate and everyone's hate.
He is so fucking gullible and stupid. He goes and takes the faces out of the match every fucking chance that they get to antagonize somebody. It's abysmal. So I probably would have gone higher on the 6-man, but he was so fucking bad. But match of the night, I went with the six man. Jake, what'd you go with?
Yeah, same thing.
I got you. Matt, did you go with six man as well?
Yep.
And Sean
as well? Yeah, hands down. Hands down.
I got you. All right. Sean, what was your moment of the night?
Oh, God, man. These are some hard words. Like, Jesus Christ.
I went with the tsunami splash. That's just because.
You know what? I actually, you know what? I would, God, this is how bad this show is. Yeah, I'm going to go with that, too. I did enjoy the fat men beating up the cruiserweights. That was a lot of fun.
I only went with that because that's the thing that Don West reacted the most to. So, Matt, what would you go with moment for?
Yeah, I went with that, but honorable mention to Andy Douglas falling ass over tea kettle through the roof.
For the wrong reason. Yeah.
Oh, man. Jake, what'd you go with?
I'm going to go with Monty calling Kaz and Hoyt a giraffe and an emu.
All right, Jake.
He's a giraffe and an emu.
All right,
Sarah Geary Television.
Worthy enough to be in your express lane tonight.
Definitely, we'll go Candido. I think Truth, just because he at least seemed to be featured when I feel like a lot of times you don't even see him do much of anything. I don't know. Not a whole lot of other people coming up. I don't know. I'm going to stick with that for now. That's the only two that I really feel like got any kind of elevation.
Yeah, I got you.
I guess Phi Delta Slam, maybe, in their debut. Okay. They look pretty good in their debut.
I got you. Matt, who'd you have in your express lane?
Yeah, I went with Truth and Saban because I could not think of a second person after Truth. So, Chris Saban.
I got you. Sean?
I think it was Jake. I'll go with Truth and Candido because I thought probably one of the better things we've seen out of Truth in a long, long time in that match he was in. So, yeah, I think he was pretty good tonight.
I went with Truth. I also went with Kaz. I thought he was pretty good in that six-man. I thought he was pretty impressive. And I'll throw a bone to Michael Shane. I thought he was pretty all right in both of his matches. So I think he had a pretty good performance tonight. But, Sean... not who's in your exit lane. How many people do you have in your exit lane?
All right. Yeah, let me run down the list. Let's get ready here. Let me see. It might not be as many tonight just because I'm so tired of having him there. Okay, the Naturals, 100% are in that. Let's see. The Naturals. Siaki did his gimmick tonight, so I can't put him in there. You know, it's kind of weird. It's like nothing. Oh, AMW and Dustin Rhodes.
Gotcha. Anybody else?
No, that we'll keep it at that. I think AMW being in that is a big enough impact that I don't have to name the whole roster. To me, that just tells you how bad this product is right now.
Yeah, I gotcha. Matt, who'd you have?
Are we ready, gentlemen?
Mm-hmm.
Naturals. Team Canada, because they felt like an afterthought. Dustin Rhodes, Monty Brown for being saddled with Triton, and AMW.
Oh, Monty. That's sad. Wow. So sad.
Yeah, well, I feel like you kind of have to compared to where he has been.
No, but that's the same thing. Like AMW and Monty. I mean,
I was fucking bummed putting him there, but I feel like you kind of had to.
I mean, imagine, did you ever think we would see AMW and Monty in our exit lanes? Never.
No shit.
Crazy. Crazy.
I was just saying, you put Team Canada in there, and they won their match, and they were still an afterthought.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. But Jay, could you have?
Yeah, I'll probably stick with the Naturals because they were like actively bad to me. Everybody else, I feel like, is just being put in a bad position by the company to not really. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I keep coming back to it. It was just all very blah. Like, it's hard for anybody to really stand out in the way they're being presented right now.
Oh, man. Y'all heaping all this natural hate on you have no idea what you're in for. You have no idea what you're in for.
Oh, I'm very well aware. I'm very well aware.
I absolutely do.
I have no idea what you're in for. Oh, man. I went with Andrew Thomas, of course, because I want to see him fire. Because
he's probably making like $40 a show. Like,
guys just trying to make a living.
Horrible. And then, you know, they debuted Triton, but he automatically just looked horrible because he didn't do anything. He just stood at the top of the ramp.
Damn.
Already poor seen guy. Him.
We haven't even seen him.
I know.
So, you're like, I've seen enough. Get the fuck out of here.
Whether
I didn't like it.
He's gonna get there at one point or another anyway. We already know this. To just put him in before. Amazing.
We've seen him like standing on the ramp with some smoke, and it's like, nah, fuck that. Get out of here.
You're out of here.
He's a very poor stander. He has to go on the exit lane.
He's ruined Monty for us, so we automatically got to put him there.
Yeah, that was my thought. Yeah,
makes sense.
But Jake, who'd you have as your great value tonight?
I'm going to go with great value, 3-minute warning for the Pi Delta Slam.
I got you. Matt, who'd you go with?
Blonde Phi Delta Slam guy as a great value lead singer of 90s pop rock band.
Sean?
I forgot to mention how much this irritated me earlier. I'm going with the tease of the Great Value DX reunion with the New Age Outlaws.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah, I definitely went with the Phi Delta Slam as Great Value Nasty Boy / Public Enemy. So, yeah, that one definitely hit true with me because one of the blind ones straight up looks like Brian Knobs to me for sure. So.
He definitely does.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you told me that was him, I'd totally believe you.
Such a pity, that poor bastard.
Yeah, I know. But that's the end of our show. I'll go around for plugs now. Jake, what do you got to plug tonight?
As always, I have Ruthless Aggressive podcast over the North South Connection feed. I recently had Matt on, actually, for my latest episode. As we're going through SmackDown, is really hitting on all cylinders right now. So it's real fun to watch and talk about. Raw is a little bit of a different story, but yeah, so check it out.
I got you. Matt, what do you have to plug?
Piece of the action over on the pop feed. Check me out on there as the host of that. Should have a new episode of that coming out probably a few weeks after this comes out. So check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at MSouza1991.
Gotcha. Sean, what you got to plug?
NWA Crack and Roll on Twitter. NWA Crack and Roll podcast should be dropping the day after this does with Ben Locke as our guest. And then Logan, you'll be on our upcoming series coming up. So always look forward to having Logan on the show, especially when we talk about matches from Japan. So I'm sure that'll be a huge disaster and I'll regret having you on, but it's very entertaining. Be a lot of fun. And then I will plug, the only other thing I will plug right now is the absolutely insanity of popcorn chicken salad, the Top Gun pod. Matt and Logan and Ben and I is probably the most off the rails podcast I have heard since the Die Hard pod. So please check that one out. It is absolutely batshit insane and should never have made air.
You forget the Summit pods. That's been since Die Hard.
No, I know. For me, I think this one is pretty up there. I think it might beat those. So that's why I didn't bring them up. But yeah,
you know, we were the common denominator on most of those pods. I'm starting to think it's an us problem, guys.
And Ben. Oh, no, Ben wasn't on Die Hard, was he?
No, yeah, he was.
We'll see. There's definitely a common denominator in this.
Yes. it's definitely a Ben, Matt, and Sean problem. So.
Yeah.
But we, definitely check that Top Gun episode out. It's as crazy and as insane as Sean said. We did YouTube Roulette the other night where we actually watched a good Japan match between Owen Hart and Jushin Thunder Liger. So, whenever that episode comes out, definitely watch along with the matches we watch because they were all pretty good. Wrestling Chicken Salad, we did that this past weekend. We did Bash at the Beach 2000. We're going to be doing Popcorn Chicken Salad coming up. We're going to be watching Euro Trip. And then from Squared Circle to Silver Screen, we're actually doing a double feature on our next episode. And we're going to be watching The Condemned and See No Evil and kind of comparing and contrasting them. So, based on how terrible or how maybe semi-good they might be. That's all I got going on right now. And I'm just going to go ahead and say at the end of the episode here that we're going to dedicate this episode to Calvin Crowell, who we lost since we've done our last episode. So this podcast is dedicated to him. And we will see you next time.